Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo Dinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi. Say hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hello.
All right, so we are now in the middle of November. This episode is going to be for November 16, 2018. And it's kind of just cold everywhere right now.
Yeah.
You know, you go up into Canada, you're basically swimming in a mountain of snow.
Yeah, basically.
You go down here, and you're being attacked by roving bands of Canadian geese. So, everybody goes down a peg.
Yeah.
So this week we got, of course, we're going to have to talk about the major celebrity death of this week, because he was just the major, like, one of the biggest forces of pop culture in his lifetime, and probably long after. We also have a little bit of cleanup from the aftermath of the 2018 midterms, because people are actually counting votes. It means that the Democrats now may have taken as many as 40 seats.
And there's still a couple left to go.
Yeah. We also have an update about the governor's race here in Georgia. Also, we're already going to start talking about 2020 because that's what we Americans. Yeah, because that's what we Americans do.
No peace.
No peace. As soon as a race is over, we immediately got to start talking about the next one. But the way it's going to affect the Democrats is particularly interesting, and we're going to tell you why. Also, we got some, I guess, the ancillary Day Zero update stuff we'll be talking about since, for those who don't know, this week Day Zero is going to be the Red Dead show, so.
Yep. And if we let this stuff go past Let's Weekend, then we would have had another piecemeal show.
Yep, and we've already done that too many times. We need to do it while it's still relevant.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we got a bunch of entertainment news, including a certain trailer that made the internet explode. All that and more on your beloved, incredible, great podcast, Let's Weekend. Worship us.
That
Go on, do it.
Just leaving that one right there.
Mm-hmm. All right, so start us off, Phil. What have you been up to this week?
So I've been, like, finishing things. Finished my Tetris Effect review. I'm trying to actually finish the journey mode in that. I've got two stages left.
So what exactly is the journey mode in that game? What exactly is, like, what exactly does that mode entail?
It's basically the challenge mode from Lumines. So you go from skin to skin, and the pace is determined by the music and not by what level you're on.
Ah.
Yeah. So I'm at I'm at the second to last stage right now, that one has the speed starts at 8. Once you get to 10 lines, it goes up to 9, mm-hmm. and then once you get to 20 lines, it's at speed 10. That's very, very difficult. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's like 36 of them to get to the next skin.
Yeah, 30. Once you get to 30 lines, then go on to the next skin, and then I have a sneaking suspicion that the last skin is probably going to be really easy. So it's just one of those, like, yeah, if you could get through this one, then you're probably going to be okay for the last one, because, I'm still enjoying that. I'm still going to continue to play that, and there's also the effects mode and stuff that I've been playing a lot of. And I'll probably, after the show, jump in and get in on some of that weekend ritual stuff that they keep doing. Because that's, like, the only way to actually unlock avatars in that game is to do the weekend rituals. Yeah. Yeah. Well, apart from some of the ones that you'll get from, level completions. But for the most part, it's all in there. So what else have I been doing? Finished off Dune. It was pretty good. I liked how at the end, Paul was basically just... He was just like, yeah, these motherfuckers are going to jihad whatever I do, so fuck it.
Yeah.
So
is it just me, though, or did that book just kind of end?
Yeah, it just kind of...
Yeah. Yeah. Like at that, it's just at that point, like Frank Herbert was like I think he just kind of keeled over on top of his typewriter. He's like,
well, I mean, where do you done on the pain?
Yeah. So, but there are sequels, so I'm sure that story continues at some point. So I'll go to the library and see if I can get the second one, which I think is Children of Dune or something like that.
No, it's God Emperor of Dune.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
No, wait. I'm trying. No, it's Dune Messiah.
Okay.
Dune Messiah. It's also noticeably shorter, you'll see.
So I'm looking forward to that. And apart from that, what else have I been doing? Well, not being cold, because I have an apartment that has actual insulation. So, yay.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, from what you were saying before, your computer is a space heater.
Yeah, well, my video card is. So all I got to do is play Defense Grid, and I'll heat the room up pretty quickly.
If it gets too hot, you just open a window.
Yeah. So, that's kind of been pretty much it for me for this week. Not a whole heck of a lot to report on.
All right, Patrick, what about you?
I'm getting ready to get back into streaming more regularly than I am right now. I don't know exactly what approach I'm going to be taking, if there's going to be a specific genre I lean into, but the main idea is just for me to stream more than I am at the moment, which is next to none, so that'll be pretty easy. But other than that, I've just been doing a lot of writing, still playing with this visual novel software that Phil introduced me to, and that's been pretty fun. I just definitely need to relearn HTML because I didn't realize how much of it has left me over the years. So,
yeah.
Well, that'll be fun too.
Yeah, Twine is it's a pretty good piece of software. It's it's fun to use.
All right. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I finished up Parks and Rec on Netflix, and that was a really nice ending.
Mm-hmm.
Where the final episode is kind of this extended episode that is kind of about kind of just tells like the future of each of the couples characters in the game in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of learn like what happens with Leslie and Ben. Find out what happens with Craig, Billy Eichner's character, which is pretty good. And yeah, it's a really nice way to send it off without necessarily leaving people on a hook. And I started watching Jeopardy on Netflix because they put that stuff up on there.
Yeah.
It's three collections of essentially like tournaments they had. And yeah, I'm halfway through the first one, or one of them. I don't know if they have a certain order on them, but...
Do they have the one with, what's his name? The guy who ended up being, like, the biggest winner in Jeopardy history?
Oh, I don't know. Not in the one I'm currently watching.
All right.
The one I'm currently watching is kind of a winner's tournament, where they brought back winners. And so I've gotten through the first...
Ken Jennings, that's his name.
Yeah, that guy's not in there.
All right.
But yeah, he so far it's been pretty good. Though I'm still trying to figure out like when these episodes are from. Because yeah, they just had Al Gore on one of the categories, reading off questions related to his book. I'm not sure when he put that one out.
Is it the Inconvenient Truth? Is that the one?
No.
All right.
Second book, I think.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, certainly been a nice thing to have on Netflix as like a. You guys should actually put more of this on.
Yeah, sort of something to watch and kind of have in the background and watch when you're interested and.
Yeah.
One of those things.
Yeah, especially as like a companion piece to you, like reading the news on a website or something like that.
Yeah.
Though I would actually like them to put like regular episodes on there as well, because these people get things right most of the time, because they're actually that smart.
Yeah, well, it's the winners tournament, right? So obviously they have to be.
Yeah, this is saying season 29, so I don't know when season 29 is. Yeah, it's Tournament of Champions and Battle of the Decades. So I'm guessing they bring back some older winners as well in the second one, but yeah. That is pretty cool to see on Netflix. Patriot Act was a good episode this past week, which is about oil.
Yeah, I think, yeah, because wasn't the one before that about affirmative action, I think?
It was Amazon.
Ah, right.
The first two were Saudi Arabia and affirmative action.
Okay.
And the oil one sort of talked about how the U.S. is the number one producer of oil in the world, which you might not expect. But we have lots of reserves,
yeah,
and lots of places to drill.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no real reason we should keep doing it.
Yeah,
particularly not even just climate change stuff, but the fact that there's a lot of waste with it.
Yeah,
there's an oil spill that's been happening for 14 years that nobody really knows about.
Yeah,
the Taylor oil spill,
mm-hmm.
which they only discovered because of the BP spill a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they were investigating that, they're like, oh, there's this other thing that's been happening. And the company gets away with it because they claim it's an act of God. Which is like, even then it's like, okay, clean it up.
Yeah.
It's still your responsibility, and if it's not 100% your fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's like letting your kid just throw shit on the floor and be like, well.
I mean, it's still it's still their property, right? I mean, that's kind of how.
It's happening in Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah.
For 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you own a piece of property, I mean, you have to do upkeep legally every couple of years or so. So why the fuck shouldn't they do it?
There's like some legal loophole, essentially, where you can claim it's an act of God and you're absolved of all responsibility for some reason.
Of course it's a loophole.
Yeah.
I could take all the loopholes in the world and wrap them around their goddamn necks, but.
Yep.
No, that would be satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But yeah, that is some good stuff on Netflix this week. As for games, I've been kind of swamped with a bunch of great stuff to play.
Yep.
There's the Spyro trilogy.
Uh-huh.
So I've been playing some of that, the first game specifically, and mm-hmm. The one knock I have is no subtitles.
Yeah, the first one doesn't really have any subtitles.
Yeah, but you sort of rescue these dragons and they talk, and it's like, this would be perfect to put some subtitles in.
Yeah, pretty much all of the audio of that game, at least half of it, has been completely redone.
Yeah.
Some of it is still the same audio from the original.
Yeah.
They just went back and touched it up a bit, but they've definitely redone a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, and it's still a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
You can definitely tell that it's a PS1 game because when you go into each of the levels, they're not all that huge.
No.
It's a fairly small area, but they do a good job of like hiding things.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're only in each area, you want to get all 200 gems and get the skill point that's in each of the areas,
mm-hmm.
which was sort of one of the first games that had achievements in it. And yeah, that has been really nice to play. But yeah, that I'm looking forward to diving into the other two games in there once I get through the first. But yeah, it's a pretty cool collection. Also been playing Hitman 2, which is just an enormous game because it has six new stages that comprises the second season. But I also have, I think it's two other campaigns, essentially. The original campaign, since I own the original season, and also the I forget what it's called, there's the Game of the Year campaign they added,
mm-hmm.
With like the second big expansion in there, and so that stuff all goes in. It was a little bit weird to figure out how it all worked, so essentially I downloaded Hitman 2, had it preloaded and all that ready to go, and then I had to go and open up the first season. And there's an option in there for getting the legacy pack for free.
Mm.
And then that had to download all that stuff for the Hitman 2, which is like 30 gigs on its own. Which the Hitman 2 is about 42 gigs, so it's about an 80 gig download at this point.
Good lord.
But with that, you get trophy sets for all of those levels in the first season. So it's kind of twice the amount of trophies that you would have normally. Yeah, so it has a set of trophies for every single level in the game. So there's all the legacy pack levels in the ones in the main game. So, and along with that, they kind of remade those original levels. But similar to the first season, there's kind of a free prologue that gives you like the tutorial stuff and the first intro level that they put in there. That is kind of like beachfront property. That sort of sets off the story for this second season, which is kind of about... in the first season, you got to figure out all these clients. There's been an ulterior motive for why we got these clients.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're trying to chase down that lead and sort of figure out what the hell is going on here. Who are these people? And try and take them down, I guess, ultimately. And yeah, like the new stuff they added here, there's foliage you can hide in. You can hide in crowds as well. And there are just a bunch of new items. So there's the briefcase, which lets you hide an item that would otherwise get noticed by other people, whether it be like a sniper rifle, some sort of big gun, or you know some of the other weapons that are very much ones that if you're going to take with you, you definitely do not want to be holding. And so it adds this kind of interesting mechanic of you can be able to hold two items at once, essentially, because you're carrying the briefcase, and you can kind of have a main weapon with you as well, which also has some benefits, because there are some other items you can pick up. I picked up, like, a car battery is a thing I can pick up and throw at people, which also can set off explosions, because it's a car battery, and there's some electricity kind of causing ability for that. But yeah, the thing the analogy I heard really that really describes Hitman 2 is that it's kind of like Tony Hawk, in that you nailed it with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. The sequel, you didn't really have to change too much. You just added new you put new environments in there, and added a couple new abilities, and that kind of made it even better. Like you didn't have to really overhaul anything here. Because I guess some of the reviews are like, well, they didn't change much. Like, you don't really need
what
to.
What was there to?
It's like, hey, you should completely change Street Fighter because Street Fighter 4 was really good. No, you don't really need to.
Tank your series and let someone else succeed.
Yeah, like, hey, you really nailed this formula. Now find something else to do with it.
Yeah.
And so they just said, you know what, we're going to make six new environments. I played through the first two, which is Miami and one in Colombia. The Miami one's pretty cool. It's a sort of race that is happening. It's kind of like a weekend event going on around like an F1 race. The cars are a bit more like Le Mans cars. And so, yeah, you're kind of taking down two of these people. And there's lots of, it's a really huge level, and it's, it definitely takes advantage of the crowd camouflage aspect of it. I've done some really cool stuff in there involving a pink flamingo suit. That is really nice to run around in because you can kind of get away with a lot of stuff with that suit because everybody knows that it's... that you can kind of get through VIP areas and all these other areas pretty easily. And it's also just really silly thing to have. The Columbia area is kind of a lot of kind of this drug cartel stuff that's going on through there. So I managed to take out a hippie and use his outfit to deliver some tainted cocaine to this this guy that's trying to create some new drugs, I guess. And so you get him to test it out, and as a result of being tainted, he kind of goes over to this one area and throws up, and you kind of just throw him over down this hole to his doom. And then I found there's a submarine in these like cave areas where all this drug making is going on. I haven't figured out that whole area yet, but it's very kind of dense area. I went up into the mansion that's above all of this. I managed to take a guy out by throwing him into a hippo pit, which was nice to do. That's where you can kind of just throw any body in Hippo there will just eat it and take care of it for you.
Waste not, want not.
Yeah. And I was kind of a little bit sad I couldn't get him to come out. I figured that would be a pretty cool thing to do, but yeah. But yeah, yeah, it's a really good sequel to the first season, and they kind of just figured out some cool new things to do with the formula that they really nailed with the first season. The only real knock I have here is that it's not episodic, so it's kind of a balancing act of like wanting to explore these early levels I'm playing further versus, you know, wanting to progress through the story and sort of see what's new with the next few areas. I know one of the upcoming areas is like a suburbia kind of setting, and apparently like everybody's houses that you can get into kind of hold some sort of dark secret in them. So I'm very curious to see what sort of weird shit they put in there. But yeah, and I've also managed to get into Tetris Effect. Finally got that installed and all that. That game is fucking good.
Yeah,
it really nails like bringing a Lumines style aesthetic to Tetris. The way that works really well.
Which was literally the one thing they had to accomplish with this, and everything else is good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a really nice presentation, especially I was playing a bit outside of VR just to see how that was, and I do like that you can kind of zoom in and all that.
Yeah.
There's a weird way you can sort of tilt the column.
The right stick. Like, you can just...
Yeah, it's like, this is a weird way to like acknowledge the work you did for the VR version. Where you can kind of look around it, even though it's not really the ideal way to play it.
Yeah.
And then I jumped into, what is it, the effect mode. Yeah. That's kind of where they just put the rest of the stuff in there. So if you want like Tetris as Tetris, that's where that is. And yeah, there's a lot to dig into there.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to putting some more time into that.
Yeah, the mystery mode is fun because that mode just fucks with you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's the one where it just is it just randomized things?
Yeah, it's just randomized stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I really like doing the focus mode stuff, and then you just fuck it up completely. Where it's just like, oh yeah, I got this set up, and then you go into focus mode. It's like, ah, fuck, I don't get the right pieces.
Yeah,
and then you just fuck up where you're putting them, and it's like, ah, it was a waste of time.
Yeah. Well, at least you can't damage yourself too badly in that.
Yeah. I think the best I've gotten so far is 9 lines.
Yeah.
Try to forget what that is.
Yeah, so 9 to something. But yeah. There's a trophy for 10 and also one for 16. Good luck with that one.
Yeah. Yeah, filling the whole thing seems like a daunting task. The one you'll almost certainly just screw yourself over at some point trying to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's certainly a really cool Tetris game. Especially to follow up on like Puyo Puyo Tetris last year. Of like, hey, let's just make this as Japanese as possible. And then we'll just make this as luminous as possible this year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think the next thing they really should do is find a way to make a new like battle Tetris Gaiden. Just ridiculous multiplayer thing. You could probably get Capcom doing that, get their Puzzle Fighter people on that.
Yeah.
That would probably actually work really well.
Yeah. Now, if you hate yourself, there's the master mode that's in Tetris Effect, so
yeah.
That's
the one issue I have with that effect mode is just trying to place yourself accurately on the map. Because it's not really an accurate map, in a sense. Because I try and place myself in Ohio, and then I go to view it in the globe, and it's like, that's like in Kentucky, or it's like,
yeah, it's like, you just kind of just sort of guess where it is. But,
it's like, why don't you just let me pick my state and just put me in there?
Yeah, that would have been nice.
It's really hard to tell, like, because I try and look at like the Great Lakes, and it's like, okay, there's Erie. But how close does this map put Ohio to that? Like, where's the bottom of Ohio on this map?
Mm-hmm. From what I can tell, that actually doesn't really matter in any way. Yeah. It's just U.S., Canada, whatever. Where you put your marker is just where you start when you go to the orbit mode.
Yeah. So. Which that is also just a weird thing where people's avatars just floating around the Earth.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if there's any point to it. Other than just being like their version of the map that a lot of multiplayer games do, where it's like, hey, here's a light for every player that's playing the game.
Yeah, that's pretty much like, it.
Oh, there's like one person in Korea. What the hell's going on? Something weird like that. But yeah, it's a pretty cool game, and there's too many games.
Yeah, too many games.
Too many games.
All right.
I got about it. How about you, Brandon?
All right, well, yeah, like Chris, I'm playing Spyro Reignited. It's pretty much been my major gaming since Tuesday. And, yeah, so graphics-wise, obviously they went back and completely redid the graphics.
Yeah.
So it looks more modern, and they did a really good job. But if you've played the original game, you can also tell that they've also changed some of the content to make it more modern. For example, when you go into the Dreamweaver's world, which those you don't remember, that's the one where you got all the big goofy fox with buck teeth who are getting big and small and big and small and big and small. You know, those guys. And you find out, of course, the reason that's happening is because if you go eventually get over there on that part of the world, there's this dude with like a shrinking cannon that he's aiming at these dudes and making them, you know, grow and shrink in size however he wants. They have completely changed how that shrinking cannon looks, because for those of you who remember in the original game, the shrinking cannon looked like an actual cannon with like a sniper scope on it. Yeah, it's just like this weird, like, green gem thing on a pillar now. And furthermore, because for the record, just in case I did it, I've already beaten the main campaign for the first one. So,
okay,
it's not a terribly long game.
Yeah, have you ever come to reckoning with the weird, goofy Pluto thing that's going on? Where all the dragons you're rescuing are sort of humanoid, while Spyro is a four-legged English-talking dragon?
Yep.
So I was like, how does this work?
Well, he is technically still a baby dragon. So, yeah. But anyway, the other thing is, if you remember when you get to Nasty Nork's world towards the end, and the first world you go into, in the original game you had like all these commando dudes with like machine guns with bayonets on them. Yeah, those are gone now. They've replaced them with, like, these weird Gatling gun things that shoot pink slime.
Yeah.
So you can definitely tell that sort of, like, the standards have changed over the last 20-some-odd years.
Yeah, you can actually control the camera now?
Yeah. You can definitely control the camera. They've remastered the soundtrack, so you can either hear, like, the original soundtrack that they had for the game, or you can hear the sort of redone dynamic soundtrack, which is affected by the game as it goes. They honestly didn't have to change much, because that original soundtrack is just perfection.
I think it was, what, Stuart Copeland?
Yep. And, of course, if you have played all of Spyro before, you will remember the those charge courses, the ones that you have to do to like speed up and jump long distances, and how they're complete and utter bullshit, especially when you need to get those one or two dragons, like the one in the treetops.
Yeah,
where it's like this really fucking convoluted process of like going down one and then going over to the other and then taking a U-turn and then going up another one the wrong way and then going up a regular ramp and then having to glide all the way. That shit.
Yeah.
Yep, that's all still there. They did not make it any simpler. It is still as unbelievably convoluted as it was in the original. But, that's pretty much been my primary gaming. I've also done more writing now because, you know, it's November and that's, you know, National Novel Writing Month. I'm not writing a novel. I'm working on sort of a concept for like a comic that I've been wanting to work on. Something I've had in the back of my brain for a long time. But basically after, let's just say after playing Valkyria Chronicles, I was inspired. So we'll see where that goes. Finally, Georgia is now being invaded by Canadian geese. And I know this because I was out, and it wasn't just day, but the couple of days before that when it wasn't, you know, raining, I was going doing my daily walk down at the track, and there's just a whole gaggle of them there acting like they own the fucking place.
Yep, they don't give a fuck.
You know, and they're like, they've made camp in like two spots, like one over behind the fence over on the baseball field and the other on the hill that leads up to the track. And every time you get close to their spot, one of them without fail just flips out their wings and goes. And.
Yeah.
I'm just saying Canadian geese are the devil.
Yeah. They're assholes. We know this.
I hate them so goddamn much. They're like up there with like deer and fucking raccoons.
Well, could be worse. At least you haven't been dive bombed by one.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. It's any day now. Mm. And that's the day that the local newspaper, as its headline, is going to have the story about the 32-year-old man who walked out of the forest naked and covered in Canadian geese blood. But
yeah,
I think that would be one. I think that would be back page stuff. News of the weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right. So, we got anything else before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, I guess then it's time for. Everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Rock Fandom Factoid. And as everybody know, Stan the Man Lee passed away this week at the age of, I think it was 93?
95.
95, yeah. Stan Lee was probably one of the most important figures in American pop culture. Now in world pop culture.
Yes.
Now that the Marvel franchises have exploded the world over. So, quick question here. Who here can tell me what was, does anybody here know what Stan Lee's first published work in comics was?
I couldn't even begin to go back that
far. I can tell you, because I've read it. Huh? It wasn't actually a comic story at all. It was a text piece at the back of Captain American Comics number 2.
That doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
All right, so I'll get to that in just a second. But first, before you do, I kind of have to tell you about how Marvel Comics itself came into existence. Because unlike Detective Comics, you know, DC, who has a much more straightforward history, Marvel's is a lot more convoluted with a lot of, like, startups and redos and stops and then starting up agains.
It's more of a collection of prints that have formed into a single...
Yeah.
Entity over the years?
Pretty much, yeah. And in some way, sometimes would go in weird directions you obviously wouldn't expect. But, okay, so Marvel... Okay, to tell the story of Marvel, the first thing you have to focus on is an individual named Martin Goodman. Now, Martin Goodman got into the publishing game back in the early 30s. And back then, that was basically the golden age of the American pulp magazine. You know, you had your sci-fi magazines like Amazing or Astounding Science Fiction. You had horror magazines like Weird Tales. You had your crime magazines like, you know, Black Mask or True Detective. Well, Martin Goodman basically published in just about all of those particular areas of publishing. He had, for example, Uncanny Stories, which was sort of his horror suspense magazine. He had several sports magazines and Western magazines. He had romance magazines. He had a magazine called Mystery Tales. And he had a science fiction magazine called Dynamic Science Stories. But that's not really the magazine that really sort of started the whole brand. No. What started the whole Marvel brand comes from a science fiction magazine he began publishing in the late 30s called Marvel Science Stories. That's right here. And it was, although it was kind of a, considered kind of a part of the third tier of, like, science fiction magazines back in the day, he made really big names to work on it. Everyone from, like, Jack Williamson, Arthur C. Clarke, Asimov, Jack Vance, L. Sprague de Camp, all these guys worked on the magazine at one time or another. The other thing you kind of also have to know about Martin Goodman is that his publications tended to kind of skirt the edge of, I'll just say it, pornography than most of his competitors did at the time. So Marvel Science Stories in particular was considered pretty racy amongst the type of publications you would get at the time. But oh, yeah, and there was also another magazine he had called Kazar, which was like a very obvious ripoff of Tarzan, but that's not important. But that name Marvel would eventually spawn the name of the first two comic book publications that Martin Goodman's group of publishing companies would publish. The first one is, of course, the one that is known today as Marvel Comics. The series that was first published back in, hold on, I gotta find this. Here we go. It's on Wikipedia. Published under the name of Timely, which was sort of the, which, for those of you who don't know, especially if you go to like supermarkets now, you'll see Marvel Comics published with Timely. Basically, it's kind of like their digest type of comics that they'll publish now. Well, they'll give you like three issues for a couple dollars. Well, Timely was sort of their original comics publishing division of Goodman's companies. And the very first issue of Marvel was published in 1939. And this particular comic has two, this comic book series would be the beginning, the debuts of two very important Marvel characters. The original Human Torch and the Submariner. But that's only one, because Timely also published another very important comic book in 1941. Yep, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby's Captain America comics. The one that has Hitler, I mean, the one that has Captain America punching out Hitler on the cover.
Yep.
Funny enough, it's that was actually before the U.S. had entered the war. That was March 1941. Pearl Harbor didn't happen until December.
Yeah.
And pretty much giving, you know, anti-fascists in America their icon for all time.
Yeah.
Something about just him giving that right cross hook to Hitler's jaw. Is just, it's classic.
To do.
It's classic, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Also, you notice the sort of weird, like, seeing how his how Captain America's original shield was, it looked like an actual, you know, shield.
Yeah.
So those are the two, like, major original publications of Marvel. Now, eventually, Timely would sort of devolve, and it would become another company called Atlas. Stan Lee really got his comic writing chops right around the time Marvel turned into Atlas. In between that time, he had, you know, he'd been in the army, because, you know, like a lot of people of his men of his generation, he went into the army for World War II. But like the first like major publication in comics is a text piece he did for the back of Captain American Comics number 2. Now, the reason why these text pieces existed at the time, I've heard like two different explanations. The first one is that It had something to do with mail taxes or paper taxes, some kind of taxation where they were beginning to tax publications like comic books. The other one I've heard is that it may have been because of paper rationing at the time, you know, once America had entered the war. But anyway, the point is, by that point, comic books had started to put these text pieces into their comic books so that they could technically qualify as a magazine. You got me?
Mm-hmm.
This is why, like, for example, if you go back to the very first issue of Action Comics, you know, the one that Superman debuted in, there's just this weird, like, two-page short story about some adventure in the South Pacific that's just out of nowhere. Well, Marvel comics, like, example, like Captain America, would occasionally have little short stories that would have the Captain America character and Bucky in the back of them. And that just so happened to be the story. A story called Captain America Foils the Traitor's Revenge. And it was actually Captain America Comics number 3. I'm sorry. I kept saying it's number 2. But what's also important is that this was also the very first time he used the pseudonym Stan Lee. Now, by the time he was working on Atlas in the 50s, his Stan Lee had basically gotten sick to death of having to work on these, like, stupid morality stories about giant monsters. And he had just, you know, it was always, like, these dumb about, like, Gru or Mongor or Fing Fang Foom or these giant monster characters that he had kept into writing. And he eventually just got sick of it. And so, by the 1950s, DC had managed to sort of revive the superhero genre after it had kind of languished for a few years while, you know, stuff like horror comics were sort of becoming all the rage. And so Martin Goodman went to Stan Lee and he said, okay, superheroes are in again. I need you to create some superheroes for our comics. And Stan Lee did something that none of the superhero comics before him had done. He gave them flaws. You know, human flaws.
Yeah.
When he teamed up with Jack Kirby, the guy who had not only been the original co-creator of Captain America, but had also been one of the illustrators for Goodman's pulp magazines back in the day. He came up with an idea where he said, let's get a couple of different superheroes, put them in a team, but they're basically like a family, you know, and like families, they bicker with each other, and they all have, you know, their own issues. And that became the Fantastic Four.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And that series basically revolutionized the entire way that superhero comics were looked at. Because up to that point, superheroes, by their very nature, were created as these, like, super idealized,
paragons.
Basically Mary Sue characters, basically. You know, everybody was wanting to do the next Superman, you know?
Yeah.
The closest you probably had was Batman. And even by then, he had basically become a parody of his original self. So that was, like, the first. But then he teamed up with a guy by the name of Steve Ditko. Who was, one, an amazing artist, and two, a crazy person. I'm not kidding either. I'll talk about that in a little bit. But he got together with Steve Ditko, and they both came up with probably what is the only other major superhero other than Superman and Batman that is as iconic as any other. Spider-Man. And again, he revolutionized the whole platform because, you know, Spider-Man wasn't like, you know, a super powerful alien from Krypton, or he wasn't like a like an ultra billionaire like Bruce Wayne was. Peter Parker is just a normal dude. He's not even that good with the ladies. He's just some dork who's like working out of like a is I can't remember if it was his high school or his college at the time, one of them, where he just accidentally gets bitten by a radioactive spider. And, like, he doesn't immediately do the right thing. He actually decides to sort of take the power and sort
gain.
Of... Yeah, and then, you know, his Uncle Ben ends up biting the bullet, and he realizes that he has to do this for good. And even then, he still makes mistakes. I mean, look at what happened to his first girlfriend.
Yeah. The bad catch.
Mm-hmm.
She got better.
It's Marvel. Nobody ever dies there. But, you know, he... And then, of course, I mean, that's only, like, a handful of the major characters he helped develop. He helped develop the X-Men, originally. Which, for those of you who don't know, before... The original X-Men, before, you know, they became the quote-unquote uncanny X-Men, was kind of just a... not terribly dissimilar from the Fantastic Four.
Right.
You know, it didn't really... Until guys like Chris Claremont got a hold of it, it really wasn't anything particularly special. He also...
The original idea was still there, though.
Like, yeah, it was still there. It's just that...
Line of thinking.
Yeah, they just built on it and made it better.
Yeah.
They made it more racially diverse, for one. But, you know, they also... We got... the version of Iron Man, Thor, the Incredible Hulk, Black Panther, Daredevil actually had already existed before then, but he kind of redid Daredevil. And of course, Doctor Strange, which was another character he created with Steve Ditko. And if you've ever seen like the old school Steve Ditko, Doctor Strange comics, holy shit, are you in for a treat? Because the man was a visionary, Ditko. Yeah. However, this also leads into the, I guess, not-so-good side of Stan Lee, because Stan Lee always kind of played fast and loose with who got the credit. And part of this had to do with the fact that the Stan Lee's working style, because basically what he would do is he would sort of sketch down a plot, and then he would give that to the artist. And then the artist would essentially storyboard it, I guess, you could say. Write the original, draw out the panels of the thing, of the plot, and that would be the finished art. Then it would go back to Stan, and then Stan Lee would just write in the dialogue and the balloons after the fact. Which, this kind of explains why, like, some of the older stuff seems a little more stilted than some of the later stuff would be. This is especially obvious with, like, some of the original Spider-Man issues, where there's, like, this sort of obvious conflict between the story that Stan Lee is trying to tell and the mood that Steve Ditko is trying to convey in his artwork. But, of course, eventually, you know, Stan Lee, he would eventually become the editor-in-chief of Marvel. He would sort of become the face of the company. He would try to sort of become the comic book version of Walt Disney. You know, he would, like, you know, he created, like, their fan club, and there's, like, there was a record album that would go out to fan club members that included, like, the voices of many of the people who worked at Marvel at the time. So, like, you'll hear Jack Kirby, you'll hear, what was it? Wallace Wood, which is, like, especially, you know, because he was working on Daredevil at the time, and that's especially a treasure, because Wallace Wood is kind of, like, one of the legends of the field, but he unfortunately committed suicide in the 80s. Steve Ditko is mentioned, but he's not on there, apparently. It's suggested that he jumped out the window, but there's, like, the secretary who's there, you know, it's pretty cool. And then there's like a stupid like marching song at the on the other side of the record. You know, he tried to, like, he would write editorials and stuff at the front of a lot of the comics. He, and of course, there was all the branding deals that they started doing. The toys and the games and stuff for children. But if there is one thing about Stan Lee that you can say that's good, is that he also knew when it was time to get out of the way and let the youngsters take over. Which is kind of the reason why what we call the Bronze Age of comics eventually became a thing. Because he was like, okay, I need to step aside. I need to let this young blood sort of, you know, flex their muscles. And, you know, I'll stay here as editor-in-chief. You know, that's when we started getting guys like, you know, Frank Miller and the lot. And, you know, like
gave
I said...
rise to a hell of a generation.
Yeah. By the 90s, though, I think something of his star started to fade, and that's partly because by the time the late 80s rolled around is when discussion of creators' rights started to gain traction. You know, because it was like people were trying to start getting it so that Jerry Siegel's estate could start getting royalties for Superman. Right. And, you know, Dave Sim, who had created Cerebus the Aardvark, he had sort of made the independent publishing boom that was like the black and white comics that were like freaking everywhere in the 80s because everybody wanted to make their new Ninja Turtles.
Yep.
But it was also that attitude that eventually created Image Comics. Because, like, the seven biggest artists at Marvel basically walked away and formed their own company. But eventually he kind of won back all of his good rep by all those cameos that he'd start showing when, you know, all of his creations started making it big, became a big box office gold. And I think that's kind of where a lot of people, how he managed to stay in the public imagination, those cameos. And, you know, sadly, we finally lost him this week. I mean, the dude was 95. He lived a pretty full life. Yeah. And I would not be surprised if he's got, like, some archives somewhere with a bunch of work he never got to publish that we'll see eventually.
Yeah, we may see it. I mean, and I don't think at this point anybody should be too surprised that this happened, given what we've learned has been going on in the past few months.
Yeah.
I don't think we actually know what the cause of death was, but, yeah.
I think the cause of death was 95 years old.
Yeah.
Well, there was that,
and also apparently some, he was having some issues with his family. I think his wife in particular.
His daughter.
Oh, his daughter, right.
His wife is gone.
Yeah, his wife passed away. He was married to her for 70-plus years.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Damn. And he had only been dating her for 2 weeks, too. God damn. Yeah. But his daughter is a bitch. And, yeah, it's just, it was a bad situation, but.
And he had business partners that took advantage of him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stan Lee was not really good at, like, after Marvel, at having these long-lasting business ventures, even though he tried his damnedest. And occasionally he would succeed, you know.
Yeah.
He actually managed to, you know, get into the manga publishing world and managed to have a couple hits against all odds. Of course, having one of the big Shonen Jump artists of the 90s working with you probably helps. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's
Excelsior,
Stan Lee.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excelsior.
He will be missed.
And now to the assholes. All right. So as always, we have to start with the show proper, and this week we have to talk about the assholes of the week. As always, we have two this week. The first are these dipshits who decided their name their son after Adolf Hitler.
Yep.
And as you can guess, yes, they were definitely in a neo-Nazi group.
Yeah.
Yep, they were in a banned neo-Nazi group because they found they have terrorist ties.
Yeah.
And yeah,
they are with National Action, which it was a Yeah, they were actually banned only recently because, you know, those guys, they were fucking, like, everywhere in Scotland for a while. They used to, like, put up these flyers. And I don't know if this happens in your part of the neck of the woods, but some of these neo-Nazi groups, you know, because they know that people are going to tear their flyers down because, you know, fuck them, they're Nazis. So they'll do this thing where they'll sometimes tape razor blades underneath them. Just to be that extra degree of asshole.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were finally outlawed in 2013 after, you know, one of them... No, I mean, they were found in 2013, but they were finally outlawed after one of their members murdered a Labour MP, Joe Cox. But yeah, they tried to...
Oh, it's them. Okay.
Yeah, it's these guys. But yeah, they tried to name their baby after Adolf, and they're just like, well, but what about freedom of speech and all that bullshit? It's the normal Nazi stock and trade. It's a pattern.
Yeah.
They don't actually believe in free speech anyway. They just try to exploit it.
Yeah. I mean, Richard Spencer has said as such.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Verbatim, almost.
On video. But yeah. So these douchebags, they straight up named their son after Adolf, and they're fucking dumbasses.
Yep. They've been, let's see, they had unanimous verdicts after 12 hours of deliberating. Let's see. They're going to be sentenced on December 14th. I don't know what the terms of... If they're... Whatever sort of sentencing they could get. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's mentioned here.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Cell Block D with a very large man named Jim. Who's...
This is in London. I mean, in England?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it needs to be next with a large, hairy Pakistani man named something like Abdul. Yeah, but anyway. And then, but our other asshole of the week isn't a person or persons, it's a thing.
Yeah, a natural disaster, to be specific.
A campfire. The campfire. It is now the deadliest wildfire in the history of the state of California.
Yep. At least 63 have died as of this article is written. Earlier
today. It's basically torched a good chunk of Malibu.
Yep, going towards San Francisco at this point. It's taking down whole towns, neighborhoods.
Yep. According to the weather forecast, they're supposed to get rain. Start getting a couple days of rain on Wednesday. But what they're going to do in that meantime, well,
yeah,
we'll have to see. I would not be surprised if Governor Jerry Brown starts some major, like, initiative so to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. Because when you get the rich and famous involved, heads are going to roll.
Did you see what Trump said about the fire?
Yeah, Miss Man,
he basically victim blamed California for it.
Yeah,
but when you victim blame California, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Trump throwing himself under the bus there?
Well, he's originally from
the vast majority of this the wooded area that was taken down is federal land.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they were in charge of it.
He also blamed them for not raking leaves properly. Something stupid like that. But he's like a dumbass, so we kind of expect that.
It's like I was trying to say that people were voting multiple times in Florida because they would go out to their car and change their head and their clothes.
Do they really think the...
I don't think that's how that works.
Yeah, does he really think that the poll workers are that stupid?
Yeah.
He does, apparently.
Yeah, because he is that stupid.
It's like, oh, here's somebody that has never really voted in his life.
Yeah. So have they figured out what may have started the fire?
I want to say it was some electrical thing, I think.
Probably. But, by the way, if you want California to just finally just up and secede from the Union. Yeah, that's how you do it, Trump.
Yeah.
Remember, California is the 7th largest economy in the world. Mm. All by itself.
Yeah.
But anyway. Really, and that sort of ties into our hero of the week, which was a garbage collector who, during the campfire, saved a 93-year-old woman from it.
Yeah, he was basically going on his route and noticed one of the old women that was on at one of the houses. Noticed she mm-hmm. was in her front yard.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of was talking to her and found out the caretaker that she has had gone home earlier that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And basically said, you know what, we're going to get you out of here because they just put out the evacuation for the area earlier that day. And she had no way of getting out otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So basically helped her get into his truck and sort of take her to safety.
Yeah.
Sort of help get her out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Good Samaritans.
Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, basically somebody who gets familiar with the people on their route.
Mm-hmm.
I assume he must have like a daytime route.
Yeah.
There's a lot of routes. Like the one here is more nighttime, like very early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I doubt you would ever really meet anybody. Mm. But yeah.
Good on him. Mm. All right. Now it's time to start the proper show proper. And to do that, we're going to kind of do the sort of, I guess, the shrapnel, the cleanup, the after news of the 2018 midterms. So far, it's going to look like the Democrats are going to claim about approximately as many as 40 seats in the House, which is a shellacking yep. for the Republicans. And there may be some more because some of them are still being counted. Basically, people really made all over America really made damn sure that they were going to count every last fucking vote because a lot of these have turned by, like, just 1,000 votes difference.
Yep.
Yep.
So first and foremost, Harry Ruda has unseated one of the most vile individuals in the House of Representatives, Dana Rohrabacher.
Yeah, the one in Orange County. In Russia's pocket.
Hmm. He was in Russia's pocket.
Yeah.
There is, like, it was an open secret. But he's just not any use to them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Furthermore, Jeff Flake's Senate seat, which, for the record, he wasn't going to be so their seat was open, and it has flipped to the Democrat, Kirsten Sinema.
Yeah, essentially, Trump bullied Flake out of this seat and now went to the Democrats.
Yeah, and this was a close one, too. I think, wasn't her opponent Martha McSally, I think, was the...
Yeah.
And,
it was about 38,000 votes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, get used to that. That's kind of how a lot of those stories went.
Yeah.
The Senate race in Mississippi is going to go to a runoff because the current representative, and, you know, this is happening as one of their representatives said she liked the candidate so much that she'd attend a public hanging.
Oh, hey.
This is Mississippi.
That's a great way to make sure you don't get reelected. So.
Yeah, this is Mississippi, by the way, which yep. Everybody's heard of Mississippi burning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and of course she refused to apologize, basically doubled down and did a bunch of whataboutism bullshit.
Yeah, and I think most recently started saying it was a joke. Also claims that she jokingly said, oh, yeah, we're going to try and suppress the Democrats as much as possible in voting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good luck. Great. Lovely.
Yeah.
So what does this look like for the Senate as far as seats go?
It would probably, let's see, right now, as
what, 52, 48,
I think. Yeah.
Well, it's good that they didn't get to 54 because that would inoculate them against a potential Senate takeover by the Democrats in 2020.
Yeah. So,
yeah, if she wins, it's 52-48, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So,
close.
Yeah. And as for Florida, well, the Senate race has officially gone to a manual recount, despite Rick Scott's best efforts.
God damn it, Florida. Jesus.
Oh, it gets worse, because Broward County had done all their votes, and they basically had to throw them out because they missed the deadline by 2 minutes.
And basically
this
because they were
consistent
not...
consistent with my entire experience with Broward County.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this is the, this county became infamous during the 2000 election, and it's really not gotten any better.
And basically they attributed this to not being familiar with the Secretary of State's site for submitting these numbers to.
Mm-hmm.
Basically computer error. and so essentially judge ruled, yeah, we're not accepting these at all. It's like, I think the quote here is, basically, I just worked my ass off for nothing. Which, yeah, that would be, that'd be frustrating, basically be working, you know, all day, night, trying to get these, because these are machine counted.
Yeah.
Trying to get all these counted in time, and basically missing it because, you know, it took too long for the site. Yeah.
Yeah, for the site to load.
Yeah. You know, at this point, I think somebody may just need to petition the UN to get some voting observers over here in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, something I forgot to mention, hey, man, too. There's a Florida man in there. It's a Florida man.
Of course there is.
Nice. And
it's as weird as you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
We really got to get a Florida man theme on a sound drop for this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only time I've seen it was in the multiplayer stuff. Because that there's like these ghost chests that are around the stage. And some of them will have, you know, items you can actually use, and others have outfits. And I was like, Florida man. Okay, I got to see.
Yeah.
So.
And more news. New England, as far as the House of Representatives is concerned, is now completely blue. There is no longer a single Republican representative for New England.
Yep.
It is.
Was it Jared Golden won the last one?
Yep.
Getting rid of Bruce Poliquin in Maine.
In fact, as far as the Senate is concerned, the only Republican senator in New England is Susan Collins,
who very much could also be unseated when her time is up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And finally, some sad but not unexpected news. Stacey Abrams today admitted defeat in the Georgia governor's race. However, and this is important, she is still not conceding the race because of very open, very naked cheating and voter suppression on the part of Brian Kemp.
Yep. They said they still have some legal stuff they're going through. Legal challenges. But yeah,
she's also starting up a new commission for voter suppression in Georgia. So
yeah,
she isn't gonna disappear, be sticking around.
No,
it's I have a feeling they're gonna find some shit too, because I have a feeling it's gonna be more than the shit that we actually saw in the news.
It's going to be all of the shit.
Oh yeah. And in a way, it also gives me permission to just straight up fucking flip off Brian Kemp if I ever see him. Because fuck you. You're not my governor. You cheated, you asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway.
But, all right. Next up. The Love Campaign. And is that, I'm trying to, is that, that's in Utah, DLS, isn't it?
Yep. Utah House District 4.
Yeah, suing Salt Lake to end the vote ballot count because it looks
at
like
at this point she's lost, and the only thing that she stands to gain from this is saving face by not letting people see how badly she lost.
Yeah,
that she's not suing to stop the count in Utah County where she's winning handily, but she doesn't want to know how she did in Salt Lake County. Apparently.
Yeah. Of course, then a judge stepped in and he said, "Yeah, fuck you."
Yep,
it's like, yeah, no.
All right, and so now
that's a little bit of comedy for the Utah races.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now with that part of the section out, we now have to talk about 2020, because we Americans never believe in getting any peace and quiet after an election. We immediately have to start talking about the next one.
Yeah, this is good. Basically ESPNism.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, the season's over. All right, next season. What's the draft?
See, you never see this shit outside of the United States.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, people are tuned into politics.
Yeah.
How bad have we needed this for how long?
Yeah, that is good. But here's the thing, though. It's not just that. It's just that it saturates our news so much.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to say the election.
It's not so much the news coverage as in the election campaigns.
Yeah, like the actual campaign lasts way too long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to say when Trudeau was campaigning for his first election, that it was essentially like 60 days, 90 days, something like that, a few months.
It's 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Over here, it feels like in 3 months, you don't even know the candidate yet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But Hillary Clinton has said once again that she wants to run for president in 2020.
Really? We're doing this again?
She does not know the meaning of the word fuck off.
And if she thinks she has a chance of getting through the primaries this time, she's sadly mistaken, because the story last time around was about Bernie Sanders and a field of moderates sticking it out as long as he could. The story this time around is the entire party's going to have been dragged to where Sanders is. Bernieism is pretty much going to be the minimum expectation of any Democratic candidate.
At this point, I don't think
Clinton can get far enough to the left to compete in this field.
Mm-mm. She's got far too much baggage at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and besides, we don't need any more old codgers. We need some new blood, damn it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know,
there's plenty of it out there.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, Bernie's wing is pretty much very fast going to become the mainstream consensus of the Democratic Party. This recent election pretty much proves that. You know, and also because, you know, Bernie is part of, like, the DNC now. So, you know, he's been putting his agenda on there. And it's because of them now that, you know, the Democrats are openly talking about universal health care now.
Yep.
You know, like, literally that was, you know, until Bernie, I mean, people have been talking about getting a universal health care system here in the United States for a long time. But it was always kind of a niche thing. And then when Bernie, you know, started running for the Democrats back in 2015 and 2016, he kind of just dragged it kicking and screaming into the mainstream.
And now
pretty much every Democrat candidate, in order to win, has to say the words Medicare for All at some point.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't think they can get through a primary without it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple of people of, like, who we think might end up on the ballot in 2020 for the Democratic candidacy. The first wing we got here, of course, is Beto O'Rourke.
Great showing in Texas.
Yeah. Fantastic. Somehow, even though he lost to Cruz, it was by, like, 2 points.
Yep. In deep red Texas.
In deep red Texas.
Now, you look at a potential primary or a potential general election.
Mm-hmm.
If he ends up against Trump, he's the Texan in that race. And that counts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, he's got the Obama sheen on him. Mm-hmm. He's young. He's good looking. He's charismatic.
He reminds me of what it would be like if Greg Graffin ran for office.
Yeah. He's also got rock star cred. So.
Yeah.
Seriously, he's got rock star cred. He was in the band, you know, the when Ted Cruz was, you know, having that cameo, he's like, what was Beto doing during that time? He was in a rock band. That's supposed to be a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't think that went over the way he expected.
That probably got him some votes.
Yeah, for the record, that band that he was in, the members of that would later go on to form at the Drive-In and the Mars Volta. So,
mm-hmm.
two of probably the most influential alternative rock bands of the last almost 10, 15 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, do you remember Bill Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
He was the cool president because he played the sax.
Yeah. Mm. And then our next individual, kind of a toss-up, is Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang is famous because he's the guy who proposed a universal basic income.
He's also, by a few days, the first person to declare for the 2020 race.
Yep. Hmm. Damn, that was quick. Yeah,
he declared a few days before Clinton, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And finally, the last one who I'm not sure if she's actually going to run for president. I mean, she's just getting into the House.
Yeah, she's got to be tempted to pull an Obama. I don't want to see her do it, to be honest.
No.
She could have a long and spectacular congressional career before getting involved in presidential politics.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She has to be like 35 in order to
run
for president.
She's only 29. So
yeah, she's still got a few years.
So,
But anyway, it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who pretty much represents the left wing of the Democratic Party now.
Yeah.
And probably pretty soon the mainstream as well.
And before she's done everything, everybody on the right just hates her for existing.
Yeah.
That's a good sign. Well. That's how you know you're ready.
Yeah.
There's the one shitbag that took a picture of her from behind. It's like, oh, look at that suit. She doesn't look like she struggles. And it's like, what?
This dumbass ever been to the Goodwill before?
Yeah.
It's like, you can have that suit that you can wear. Like, that's your one suit, so you just try and use it to weddings and funerals or wherever you need to go, and you just try and stretch it as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or one of those stores where they, like, you know, sell, you know, the major fashion labels at a lower cost because, you know, they were last year's whatever. But, yeah, you can get a pretty good suit at very affordable prices if you know how to stretch a dollar.
Yeah.
And if you know where the good thrift stores are.
Yeah.
Which then the internet went in on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people found him, I think for a Halloween, like cosplaying Wendy Koopa.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up the picture for this so you guys have to see this as well.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I have to see this. I really do.
Yeah.
Let's see.
But, in the meantime, Cortez is pretty much going to, I'm convinced that her and Bernie are basically the ones that have dragged the Democratic Party back to the left after decades.
And now it's going to be a full movement, and I think we're going to be seeing more and more of these Sanders-influenced candidates stepping up.
What I really want to see is an actual, like, independent labor party to actually pop up.
Oh, that'd be great.
Something that could, on the one hand, still be a viable vote-getter, but also something that can act as, like, a cudgel to the Democrats to push them farther left. But the only problem, though, is that that would also mean that the Republicans will end up getting, like, a independent ultra-conservative party, and I don't want us to turn into Weimar Germany.
No.
Yeah. So,
But, all right, so, that part of the show is past, and now we got to talk about the crazy shit. For example, in Australia, a woman has been arrested for contaminating strawberries with needles. What?
Yeah, so this is a follow-up to the story we talked about a while back.
Oh, right.
They're finding the needles in strawberries. So they finally,
and they found the person?
Yep. And it's very much an act of workplace revenge. She's been charged with 7 counts of contamination of goods, faces up to 10 years in jail if convicted.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, basically, she was a former supervisor at the farm in Brisbane. She felt mistreated by colleagues and had spoken to coworkers about taking revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
So she did this. And,
yep.
I think a couple people got hurt, too. Mm-hmm. So that's not good.
Mm. All right. If you want to get back at your workplace, there's much more efficient ways to do it.
Yeah. Flaming bags of shit, those are classics.
Arson is potential option. Mm. But needles and strawberries,
just don't do that.
That's just stupid.
Yeah. So there's the image I'm talking about.
Okay, I'm looking and...
I'm looking against my better judgment.
Yeah, I really wish I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, I think I'm blind now.
Wow.
And which, there's a lot of people spoofing. This is the guy that actually took the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so, a lot of people spoofed it with their own images and whatnot. But this is Zenny, I think, Jardin.
Mm-hmm.
Who works at Boing Boing and has a Patreon. But she writes here, Hill staffer sent me this pic of at E-Scary.
Mm-hmm.
They took just now, I'll tell you something, that weave and that ass look like a girl who struggles.
Yeah. So, alrighty.
Alright. Next up, in stories of why... There is a breakfast cereal made out of Sour Patch Kids that's coming after Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, so this follows the recent trend of basically making cereal versions of snacks, like candy. There's like Nutter Butter and Chips Ahoy,
mm-hmm.
Hostess Honey Buns and Donettes,
mm-hmm.
yeah. and Oreo O's, which we saw in the 90s, but made a comeback last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sour Patch Kids are joining them. And from what I've seen, they're supposed to be kind of like Fruity Pebbles, but like sourish.
See, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like...
No, because unless you eat them dry, they're going to taste like ass.
Yeah.
Milk on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, this sort of is happening because this is the same company, Mondelez, that has mm-hmm. partnered with Post on these sort of cereals before.
Mm.
They're responsible for the Nutter Butter one as well as Honey Made S'mores,
which
has like graham cracker squares, chocolate puffs, and mini marshmallows.
Mm.
But yeah,
those sound actually good.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and this seems like it's going to be a Walmart exclusive on December 26th, and we'll go out to other major retailers in early 2019.
Mm.
And eBay shortly thereafter.
Yep. All right. Next story we got for the night comes out of Japan. Now, Japan kind of has this reputation for being really technological savvy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Except their new minister for cybersecurity has publicly admitted that he doesn't use a computer.
Yeah, he's admitted, since I was 25, I've been in a position of authority where secretaries and employees handle such tasks for me. I give instructions to my aide, and so I don't punch into a computer myself. But I'm confident our work is flawless, which is very much just a bureaucratic boss.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's like, you do the work, which him saying punch into a computer says of the era of computers he's familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So, old guy, hasn't used a computer, thinks his work is flawless,
can
get hacked in approximately 15 minutes.
Yeah, he's 68.
Yep.
Yoshitaka Sakurada.
Yeah.
Chairman Xi Jinping sends his regards.
Yeah, he's currently working with the organization of the 2020 Tokyo Olympics. And I guess recently he's also... appeared clueless about how USB sticks work and answering questions about the security of the country's power grid.
Mm.
Oh,
I'm going to look at this link and see what this is all about.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, if you're supposed to be the cybersecurity minister of a country, using a computer should probably be a prerequisite. I might be old-fashioned that way, but...
Yeah, well, Rudy Giuliani... He owns a cybersecurity mm-hmm. firm. Even though if you know anything about Rudy Giuliani, you probably say he probably shouldn't have that or company. He's anything but about cyber and security stuff.
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, I thought the Japan story that we were going to talk about this week would have been the 35-year-old man who got married to a hologram, but we'll save that one.
Yeah. See, one isn't just as surprising.
No, that's just Japan.
That's just an old Japan moment.
Yeah.
That's just a story that reoccurs every so often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Next up, our next story is out of Dubai, which is basically like Donald Trump if it was a city.
Mm-hmm.
Really don't think you need to add any more to that. It's basically like it's the most obnoxiously wealthy place on Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, what if the cops had more funding than they need?
Yeah. Well, apparently they do because they're training on hover bikes now.
Yep. The bikes are from California company HoverSurf.
Mm-hmm.
They are their S3 2019 hover bikes.
Yeah. For those of you who are wondering what these are, they're basically, imagine like one of those little drones that you can get at like a hobby store, then make it like several times larger and then put some handlebars on it.
Yeah.
It's like a quadcopter that you can ride.
Yep.
Kinda.
Yep. Which, first of all, admittedly, awesome. But second of all, why?
It's Dubai.
Yeah, exactly.
And whatever you do not break the law in Dubai.
Yes, they will straight up hang your ass.
I want to see what happens when these crash. Do the blades just come flying off?
Oh, yeah.
They will.
I'm going to start chopping people's legs off.
Yep.
But yeah, these are electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles, eVTOL. Mm-hmm. So they signed a deal in 2017 with HoverSurf, and they've gotten the first serial production units off of this line, and are started training their officers to fly them. These are going to be a first responder unit to access hard-to-reach areas, and I guess they're aiming to have these ready to go by 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They got two crews training right now, and they're going to increase the numbers on that. The company has said they're basically ready to make as many as they need.
Yeah.
Because they have essentially exclusive rights to order as much as they want.
Well, we're officially in Blade Runner world now.
Yeah.
Yep. Seems like these things cost about $150,000.
Yeah.
Again, Dubai.
Well, Dubai's got Lamborghinis as cop cars, so what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
It says your orders are open to civilians, but Segura Khan cautions that buyers are screened to ensure that they can handle the new tech. Which I guess in Dubai is just, you got enough money? You got insurance? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure alcohol actually isn't in Dubai, because it's mostly... But then again, there's a lot of rich assholes who go there, too, so...
Yeah. Mm.
God, I cannot wait until the desert swallows that city whole. Anyway, next up in science news...
I mean, they'll have the vehicles to outrun it.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. All right, next up in science news. About 12,000 years ago, a giant asteroid hit and made a crater underneath Greenland. We know this because we just found it this week.
Yep, it is a 19-mile-wide impact that remained hidden under a half-mile-thick sheet of ice.
Yep.
Until it was exposed by some state-of-the-art radar that these scientists from the University of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Hiawatha Glacier in northwest Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's the result of an iron asteroid about 1 kilometer in size that struck the island at the end of the Pleistocene era. Which they think probably helped lead to the end of the Ice Age.
Yeah.
Or towards the end of the Ice Age. But yeah. It took about 2 decades to identify this thing with... most of the data was collected between 97 and 2014. Mm. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Mm.
It's a big ass hole.
Yep.
So
next up, a story that's actually really cool. It looks like we have discovered a super Earth, and it's actually only 6 light years away.
Yeah, this is orbiting around the Barnard star. It's the second closest super Earth we know about. And the Barnard star is the closest single star to our sun. It's in the Alpha Centauri system. Or no, the bright Alpha Centauri system is about two light years closer and hosts a planet like this on its own, but it has 3 stars. But yeah, this is a small red dwarf star that's older than our sun, about a sixth its size. And yeah, so this planet is, where is it at?
Well, if it's, 6 light years away, that's, theoretically feasible to actually get to.
It'll take a hot minute, but you'll get there.
You could use cryosleep for something like that.
Need to set up a generation ship, maybe, but...
Yeah.
You can do it.
Basically, it's about 3 times the size of Earth, and it is a very cold planet. Its surface temperature is around 270 degrees below zero Fahrenheit on average.
Even the people in Siberia wouldn't want to live there. Jeez.
Yep.
All right.
So that's very much a planet we're probably going to keep studying. It's far too cold for liquid water to exist on the surface.
Yeah.
There's probably plenty of it underneath.
I would not be surprised if there is some unique deep sea life on that planet.
Yeah.
It'd be like, I think it's Io. It's the planet that orbits around Jupiter that has ice on it.
Would not be surprised if you were to break through that ice and go deep in the water, you'd probably see something a lot like the Cambrian explosion.
Yeah.
Like it would just that weird time in history when the line between plant and animal was like really blurry,
And I want to say there's some sci-fi horror movies about going to Io.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like one of the sequels to 2001.
Next up in science news, you know that kilogram you've been using?
Yeah.
Well, you can set it aside because scientists are getting ready to redefine it.
Yep.
Why? Didn't it work just fine?
Sort of. So, the way that we have defined the various base units of measurement has been on like physical objects. Like they had some examples here. I want to say a piece of platinum iridium was sort of the definition of what a a centimeter or something like that. Like they had these physical objects that the meter was once the length of a bar of platinum iridium. But now it's defined by the constant speed of light in a vacuum. And it's sort of a speed, like the distance that it can travel in a certain amount of time. Like a very scientific, exact, like unit of measurement. Versus this physical object that technically, loses mass.
Yeah.
Sort of technically gets slightly smaller as time goes on.
Yeah. So don't worry, you're not going to have to go back to math class or anything. It's just...
Unless you get really far in your math studies.
Yeah.
Math and science studies. But yeah, the kilogram is getting the same treatment. Since 1889, it's been defined by a shiny piece of platinum iridium in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that would be the standard by which everybody else's version of the kilogram would be measured.
Yep.
But unfortunately, when they have to clean it or whatever, they would have to be very careful with how they did it to try to minimize the amount of mass that would be lost to this process.
Yep.
And so they finally figured out a good way to define it in a way that is exact and sort of a universal measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where's it at here? The new definition involves an apparatus called the Kibble balance, which makes use of the constant to measure the mass of an object using a precisely measured electromagnetic force. In the present system, you have to relate small masses to large masses by subdivision. That's very difficult. The uncertainties build up very, very quickly. And yeah, it's taken a few years of work, or it's taken years of work to fine-tune the new definition to ensure the switchover will be smooth. And yeah, let's see, what is the exact measurement here? I don't think they... Oh yeah, it's... So a kilogram would be defined by a tiny but immutable fundamental value called the Planck constant.
Okay.
Yeah, measures Planck's constant to within 13 parts per billion in 2017. Yeah, they have this like whole Kibble balance machine that is working at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So that's something's coming up. Like your weird nerd trivia is going to be about the new standard for the kilogram.
Well, I mean, as you know, science and technology march on, you know, eventually they have to go back to some of this old stuff, and
yeah, it's just impractical.
Yep.
It's just having like a mathematic.
I guess a better way of saying it would be that they're not so much redefining it as they're clarifying it.
I think they're redefining it in that what we use to measure this thing is changing to something else.
Yeah, but then now they're going for something that's going to be constant so that, you know, it won't change.
Yeah.
They don't have to do this again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that kilogram's been the last unit of measurement. We haven't had a fix for that.
But,
and we'll be over here saying, fuck you, what's a pound?
Yep.
All right. So this next story we have here is basically just a cautionary tale on showing that if you try and fake it on the internet, eventually it will catch up to you in real life. So there is this heavy metal band called Threaten. Never heard of Threaten? Of course you haven't. Nobody has. Even though they apparently had 38,000 plus followers on Facebook.
Yep.
But it turned out that they had basically bought those. Well, I say they. It's actually this one dude. It's like a one-man project that became a band.
Yeah.
They play live, I guess.
Yeah.
So they said, we're going to go and we're going to do a big tour at the EU. And nobody went there.
Showed up, yeah. I mean, you've heard that the phrase fake it till you make it. But, yeah.
This is taking it a bit far.
Yeah. Basically, they did this whole tour and they just pretty much played to nothing but empty rooms. I mean, there was one point where they sold like 210 tickets and only 3 people showed up. Midway through, the drummer and the rhythm, and I guess the lead or rhythm guitarist quit, and the bass player is still with him because he couldn't afford a plane ticket back to the U.S.
Just one of these weird stories that is this guy basically paid for all these Facebook likes and YouTube comments to sort of prove that they were a thing that people enjoyed. And managed to fake their way into a European tour. Even though they didn't really have any fans. And just kind of pissed off these venues that were like, yeah, we'll get a lot of business here. You know, and they're furious because, you know, they didn't sell the tickets. They're not selling any, you know, drinks or merchandise or anything like that. They're not getting any money out of this.
Yeah. Now I'll tell you one thing, because this was, like, I was just thinking about this. The way that he went about it actually could have worked if his timing had been better.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. Because,
well, the thing of it is, he made it for a European tour. What he actually should have done was tried to scam his way into one of the big European music festivals. Then you got a captive audience.
Yeah.
See, if you had done that, that could have worked.
Yeah, they even have some videos of like a fake live concert that they paid for, and an official music video. I'm not watching any of this because I don't want any of this tied to my YouTube account.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you like pull it into a
private browser tab.
Yeah. Also, once people started figuring this stuff out and sort of brought it to the public, he basically claimed it was all just part of the illusion. Let's see.
They said it was a publicity stunt.
And he said, what is fake news? I turned an empty room into an international headline. If you are reading this, you are part of the illusion. This tweet is great because it says hashtag marketing, hashtag psychology, hashtag social media, hashtag fake news, hashtag threaten, hashtag breaking the world, hashtag music industry, at NBC News, at BBC News, at Joe Rogan, at Rolling Stone, at Billboard.
If we're going to have actual content in the tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Note the series of hashtags that are meant to
boost signal.
SEO, basically.
Yep.
See, and I haven't even listened to this guy's music yet, and I already hate him.
Yeah, it's like he was looking for publicity, and he got exactly the wrong kind.
Yeah.
All
right. So, as you probably not realize, this is the entertainment portion of the show. So next up is some Netflix news. They're going to have their first music competition show coming up, and hosts are going to include Cardi B, Chance the Rapper, and T.I.
Yep. It's going to debut in 2019. Yep, and kind of be about promoting lesser known hip hop talent.
I'm not a real fan of these music competition programs because they're just blah.
It's a lot of behind the scenes bullshit, let's be honest.
Yeah. And really, you always want to pay attention to the person who doesn't win because they're usually the ones who are successful.
Yeah.
So.
And it's just sort of Netflix getting more into the reality stuff after having a big hit with Queer Eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what happened at American Idol, you know. Clay Aiken came second to, what was it, Justin Rubin? Rubin Stuttered, I think what was his name, or something like that. And he's a niche gospel singer, whereas Clay Aiken became an international.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Or Kelly Clarkson, who became, like...
massive.
Yeah.
One of the few that really hit big.
Yeah. Mm. And then like, you think about, okay, so, like, who else won big? Bo Bice. Who the hell gives a crap about him?
Yeah.
Next up, this is especially cool. So, a quick little history here. Before Walt Disney and Ub Iwerks created what's considered to be just the most recognizable icons of animation, Mickey Mouse. They had another popular character before him called Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. Yeah.
Yep.
And of course, Disney kind of reintroduced him to the world through Epic Mickey. And so he's actually, he's kind of a part of the Disney universe now.
Yeah, they trade in actual human forms.
And in Japan, archivists have actually found a Oswald short that people had thought had been lost.
Yep. It was released in 1928. Basically there were a few that were sent over to Japan. Back when it was released, and kind of one of these just happened to end up in a toy wholesaler's market. mm-hmm. in Osaka, and a high school student managed to buy it.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm. Until he read a book titled Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, The Search for the Lost Disney Cartoons, published mm-hmm. in 2017, and yeah, realized what he had, and sort of very much made it publicly known that he had discovered this.
Can you imagine that oh shit moment when you like you realize what he had there?
Yeah.
It's like I think I'm set for life now.
Yeah. The mouse yeah. is gonna be knocking on your door at any minute and they're gonna be willing to pay out the ass for it.
Yeah, yep. And digitize the shit out of that thing because you know that film stock is not gonna last.
Does
forever.
Not keep.
Oh. Yeah, so yeah, look for to see this on YouTube any day now. that is legit pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I wonder if Oswald's going to show up in Kingdom Hearts 3. Mm. Well, anyway. Yeah. Next up, in other Disney news, we got our first trailer for the live-action Dumbo movie, which is being directed by Tim Burton.
One right above that.
Oh, yeah. Before that, Pixar put out a teaser trailer for Toy Story 4.
Mm. Yeah, which isn't much. It's like, hey, here's the character that's going to be in this.
Yeah.
And this weird fork.
That doesn't belong there.
Yeah.
One of these things is not like the other.
Mm-hmm. I think it's being called Forky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a fork with, crap, what's it called? The,
Pipe cleaner.
Pipe cleaner, yeah. It's like pipe mm-hmm. cleaner arms.
Yep. Mm. That's, okay, I don't know what the hell that was about, but we'll see. Oh, and there also was that one with Key and Peele, which was actually pretty good. So
yeah.
Them doing the doorman sketch.
And yeah. That's going to be out June
21st,
2019.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
All right. And, of course, like I was just saying, we got our first trailer for the live-action Dumbo movie being directed by Tim Burton.
You can definitely see the Tim Burton in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Tim Burton as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and good.
You're just wondering, where's the Johnny Depp?
Yeah. Where is Johnny Depp? Where is he going to show up?
Is he Dumbo? You just put him in an elephant costume. Mm.
Well, in good news, there's no racist crows.
No.
Not yet, at least.
Yeah, we haven't. No, maybe in the full movie, but who knows?
Yeah.
God, I hope not.
Mm.
That
Dumbo looks pretty good, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to screw up an elephant.
Yeah.
Some interesting actors in this. Danny DeVito is the circus owner.
Mm. That makes all Farrell, sense in the world.
Colin Farrell is the former star, whose mm-hmm. kids, I guess, are sort of the caretakers of Dumbo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Michael Keaton is sort of the eccentric, rich dude that tries to exploit Dumbo, I guess.
Mm.
I have got to see what the pink elephant sequence is going to look like in this movie.
They showed a little bit in here. You see the bubble elephants.
Yeah.
It's
like an actual part of the act, I think. It seems like more like an actual part of the act, not like he gets drunk.
Yeah.
And just hallucinates big time.
Yeah. And finally, as part of the movie portion, the entertainment portion, the trailer that made the entire internet explode, Ryan Reynolds' Detective Pikachu.
Yep. And it actually looks pretty good.
It gave me so many emotions that were conflicting with each other.
Yeah, this should not be good, and yet it's amazing.
It's has far better than any it has any right to be.
Yep. And yeah, they come up with an interesting style for the Pokemon themselves, where it's realistic, but not that much. Not like when you see like here's what the Simpsons will look like in real life.
Yeah, and it's pure like, nightmare fuel. Yeah.
This is at least cartoonish enough.
Yeah.
To avoid that.
They gave them, they basically followed the essential character designs, but gave them realistic textures.
Yeah.
So Pikachu is,
pretty furry.
Fuzzy mm-hmm. and adorable. And God damn it, I just want to cuddle him and hug him and just put some Fuck.
And they play up the early portions where the kid Tim is sort of coming to terms with being able to understand this Pikachu, but nobody else can.
Yeah. Well, now you know how Ash feels all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see a Jigglypuff, which is also furry as hell.
Yep.
A Psyduck, which is not. There's a Mr. Mime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that Mr. Mime portion.
Yep.
And let's see, there's a Squirtle.
There's a Charizard
and a Charmander. Both of them show up.
Charizard's like trying to fucking eat the Pikachu, which is scary as fuck.
Let's see, there was also
Greninja. Is that what the ninjas are?
The Greninja, yeah, that's them.
Yeah. Those are like seems like the big baddies, at least in this trailer.
Yeah. What were you saying, Phil?
I was just saying, I get like a distinct Wave 1 impression from this particular trailer.
Yeah, it's very... well, no, not the Greninjas. The Greninjas are pretty recent, aren't they?
Yeah, they're from the past few generations.
Yeah, mostly these are the ones that people recognize.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if Lucario is in here somewhere. I mean, he is in Smash, so...
Yeah. So, that this looks just wrong and also amazing.
And it's like all the parts of Pikachu, all the parts of Pokemon that's implied.
Yeah.
But, like, never spoken about openly in the games.
Yeah.
All right. And then before we get to our Day Zero update shrapnel picks, the Black Friday deals preview extravaganza. All right, Chris, go for it.
So there is a lot of shit on sale. But Cheap Ass Gamer has this really nice Google Doc showing you like all of the deals from most of the major retailers. Sort of making it easy to understand like where this stuff is being offered at. And yeah, it seems like some of the big stuff, like console-wise, is the PS4 1 terabyte console with Spider-Man. That's going to be $200 at most places. And that's going to be like, if you don't have a PS4 yet, this is the perfect bundle for you. Along with that, the two main PSVR bundles are going on sale. It'll be $200 for the one with Astrobot and Moss. And the $250 for the one with Creed and Super Hot VR and the two moves. Let's see. There's going to be a 1 terabyte Minecraft bundle for the Xbox One S. That is going to be $200 as well at most places. Let's see. Switch. Not really any deals. It seems like a bundle is out there with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for $300. That's going to be at most places. The 2DS has a Super Mario Maker bundle. That is going to be $80.
Okay.
And yeah, it seems like the Genesis Classic is going to be $40 at Kohl's. The Atari Flashback is going to be $40 there as well.
Okay.
I wouldn't buy either of them.
Games-wise, there are some really great deals depending on what you want. I would note God of War here is $25. Really good deal. On PSN, it is $22 starting today.
Okay.
I think Detroit is also $22.
Yep.
Somewhat undercutting some of the retail deals.
That's what you got to do if it's digital.
Let me see this. Just basically, you can look at this whole list. There's a ton of stuff here. Like, and a lot of games are going half off that are fairly recent, like NBA 2K19. Let's see, NHL 19. At least on digital, NHL 19 is $30. And they introduced a weird new bundle called NHL 19 99 Edition, which when I initially saw, there's like no space. There's no like commas or dashes in there to separate it. So I looked at it initially. I was like, what's this 1999 edition of NHL? They fucking make a PS1 style game. I was like, I'd be up for that shit.
Yeah.
But no, it's includes some Wayne Gretzky hockey ultimate team stuff in there.
Oh, number 99.
Yeah. But yeah, there's... I'm trying to look up the... They put out their sale for PSN today. So I'm trying to look at what the prices are. You can get a 12-month PlayStation Plus code for a sub for $40. 33% off.
Okay.
You get a whole year's PlayStation Now for $80. Which I would put about, what, $6.50 a month, essentially?
Yeah, it's about, it's 25% off.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Let's see. There is Black Ops 4 is $48. Call of Duty never used to have Black Friday sales. Now they do, and now they're actually doing some pretty good ones. Like 20% off is pretty good for that game coming out about a month ago.
Yeah, but there's also the fact that they've started sneaking in.
The microtransactions are in there now.
Yeah, after the reviews came out and they thought, okay, coach is clear, they started.
let's see. Yeah, Detroit is $22. If you spend $27.49 on it, you get Heavy Rain with it. So if you don't have that yet, you can get that. Diablo 3 Eternal Collection is $20. Divinity Original Sin 2 is $42. I know Brandon enjoyed that a lot.
Yes, if you get a chance to play it, play it. It's great.
Yep. Yeah. Doom is $15. Dragon Quest XI is $42. So that one's a little bit more than the retail sales. I think it's $30 at most. So it depends on how much you want to not go out on Black Friday or order online for a physical version. I think it's $30 at Best Buy. But yeah, there's Skyrim's $20. Fallout 4 is $15. They got all the DLCs on sale. Far Cry 5 is $27. FIFA 19's $30. You get Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition for $20. It's about $10 off. God of War is $22. Hollow Knight is $7.49, half off.
By the way, there's not. You're gonna have to do that because there isn't a physical edition coming out now. So
yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn Complete Edition is $15, which includes the big expansion. Injustice 2 Legendary Edition is $18. Kingdom Come Deliverance is $30. Lego DC Supervillains is $30. Madden's $30. Lego The Incredibles is $30. Shadow of War is $20. Monster Hunter World's $25. NBA 2K9's $30. And NBA 2K Playgrounds 2, which just released a few weeks ago, is $20. NBA Live 19 is $20. NHL 19 is $30. And the 99 edition is $40. Neo is $16, though the complete edition is $22.
Best version. Jump on that.
Yeah, get in.
Nier's $30. Persona 5's $20. Overwatch is $20.
A lot of good.
Red Dead Redemption 2 is technically on sale, but it's all the expensive editions. You get the special edition for just under $70. The ultimate edition for $90. Rocket League is $10. It's half off. Shadow of the Tomb Raider is $30. So that's one of the games that I want to say I saw people saying that was cheaper than retail. It's on par. So if you want to know how well Dragon Quest XI did compared to Shadow of the Tomb Raider, one is higher for the digital sale versus the other, or they're more desperate for you to buy it.
Thinking Dragon Quest XI did better.
Battlefront 2 is $10. The new Starlink is $45. I'm curious to try that out, but not to pay right now.
Not curious.
Super Bomberman R is $20. Wolfenstein 2. For whatever reason, they have both versions of Wolfenstein 2 for $20, which includes the digital deluxe edition, which includes the season pass. I think they dropped the MSRP on that, never adjusted the base game. So when they put the same price, the percentage discount on it, it's the same price. Yeah, Zakuza Kiwami 2 is 30% off, so it's $35.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
VR-wise, Creed Rise to Glory is $15, half off. Doom VFR is $15. Elder Scrolls Skyrim VR is $30. Firewall Zero Hour is $30. Zone of the Enders, the second runner, is $20. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff on the PSN Black Friday sale. I think XBL also has theirs going on. They also have some good deals.
We'll leave that for the users to check out.
Yeah, because there's, it's all on Major Nelson's site, and they don't list prices.
Yeah.
it's never easy to navigate that stuff. But I don't know if you saw this, Phil, but they finally have a shopping cart on Xbox Live.
Yes, so you can
finally buy more than one item at a time.
One thing at a time, yes.
And you can actually see the final price for what you're purchasing. It isn't like, oh, this is $14.99 plus tax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, now you actually see what your price is.
Yeah. Like there were times like I have a certain amount of credits, like, okay, can I actually buy this? I don't know what the tax would make it up to, and it's like, fuck it.
Yeah. Just don't buy. And the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One carts are the same now.
Mm. Okay.
So that's cool.
Still can't use credit for Xbox 360 games on Xbox One.
Yeah,
I've seen people like, okay, what's the cheapest Xbox 360 I can buy to actually buy this stuff with my credit? Mm. It's like, that's fucked up. You're making people have to like go to the Craigslist to figure out, you know, does this have the right video cables for me? I need the wireless adapters to have that. And it's like, oh, this is just fucking let people buy this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since they're slowly overhauling their digital marketplace.
Yeah.
But not in the ways that it needs. Because it needs just overhaul it all so it's all in one place and runs on the same rules as Xbox stuff does.
Because it's getting there.
Yeah. But every time I look at the Xbox 360 side of that site, it's like, this is like 11-year-old site.
I'm looking at.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and now, lots of other stuff. Take it out. Take a look at it. So we're going to quickly wrap us up by talking a little bit about the shrapnel from what would have been Day Zero update, except, you know, this week it's going to be the
Red Dead Show.
Yeah. So first announcement, PC Classic Edition. Yes, there is going to be a PC version of all the various plug-and-play classic consoles. And this one is going to be based around old PC games. There's going to be about 30-plus games at launch with, of course, you'll actually be able to download stuff to it. Yeah. So
there, you will be able to expand your selection of games over time, and it also has an SD card slot that they'll be making use of. It seems so far like they're angling this toward games from around what console gamers might call third or fourth gen.
Yeah,
I think is right in the strike zone for something like this. You can get a lot of mileage out of it.
Yeah, it's mostly aimed towards id Software and Epic.
Yeah, the demonstration that they showed, even though none of these games have been licensed yet, and they were emphatic to let us know, Doom, Commander Keen 4, and Jill of the Jungle.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they're going for the same types of games that you would see on another classic edition, but it'll be interesting to see that list as the licenses themselves pile up and we start to get a feel for what this device is really going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I signed up for the newsletter because I want to be kept in the loop on this one, because at first I thought it was like a troll, and then I was like, wait a minute, this is actually serious.
It does sound like a troll, doesn't it? But it's
Blizzard
not.
Blizzard has a lot of games that they could contribute to this.
The original Warcraft, Blackthorn.
Three Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lost Vikings. They have a PC version of that. But after that, Warcraft 2 did have a DOS version. And it seems like they're limiting themselves to DOS. So
Yeah. But, I mean, leaning it towards Id and Epic, I mean, if you were part of the LAN party scene, it makes perfect sense.
I can also see them expanding on that, though, because I don't think those two companies could carry it necessarily, but they do really well.
Yeah. There's going to be more, for sure.
I almost wonder if we're going to see a few installments of Ultima on this thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Lord British would probably be all for it if given the chance. Well, no, because he doesn't control Ultima anymore. EA does.
Yep.
This is one of those rare opportunities when EA would have something to contribute to something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, and
they had so many studios that they bought and killed.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing the first couple of Myst games on here too.
Yeah.
SimCity 2000 might find a home on this.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see this thing be able to emit noises, classic PC noises.
No, please.
Like your singing printer and your modem.
Dear God, no. Just no. I will smash it with a hammer.
Yeah. Well, I think it looks like it has a floppy drive, but no.
No, that's it flips down, and that's where you put your SD card.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They said in the video that they were probably going to use the SD card slot somehow, maybe release games on that as well. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Definitely going to be putting together my list of 30 games to see how right or wrong I am when they finally roll it out. Because frankly, that's been kind of fun.
Yeah.
As we've been seeing these classic editions of consoles come about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right.
Let's keep on going.
And next up, we got... Earlier today.
Teen's Shadowbringers.
Yep, the new expansion. Oh.
This follows up on a sort of mini story arc from toward the end of Heaven's Ward.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did a lot of explaining toward one of the aspects of the Final Fantasy multiverse that they've never really explored before.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Final Fantasy IV introduced the concept of the Dark Crystals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then there would have to be Warriors of Darkness, right?
Yep.
Right.
Well, guess what?
Hey, you're introduced to them in that story arc.
Yep.
And they also happen to be the Light Warriors from Final Fantasy I.
Yeah. Haven't they also put Ivelisse in that game now?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I haven't played it in a while, so.
The War of the Lions in Final Fantasy XIV is an old Garlean fairy tale.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Cool.
Little announcement there.
Not where I thought they were going to be going with the main story, but I fully support it because As Goes Light, So Goes Darkness was one of my favorite story arcs in the game thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. And final story for the night, some E3 news. Yep. Sony is bowing out of E3 2019 while Microsoft is doubling down on it.
Yeah, well technically Sony did skip the last three anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're just making it official now because they technically didn't show up for the past two.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So Microsoft seeming to bolster their plans lately
E3. They kind of threw a little bit of shade at Sony for taking E3 off and said that they look forward to seeing everyone there. Mm-hmm. And it may have something to do with the rumors of a Blu-ray-free Xbox One model that's rumored to be in the works for 2019.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, I don't know if they're going to do that as an X. That would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it's S related.
Whatever it is, it better have a huge hard drive.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, preferably you would have a hard drive that's replaceable. That's been the big
Achilles
heel
of the Xbox
One.
Yeah, but that's not Microsoft's MO this gen.
Yeah.
They don't want you touching anything in there.
Yeah.
All right, and we got a show, folks.
Oh boy!
And we had a lot to go through, but we managed
we
to do it.
Yeah.
What a week, huh?
Yeah. Well, I would like to remind all our listeners: if you got a question, a comment, something you want us to read on the air, or I don't know, a poem or something, I don't know. You can catch us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked at the show notes. And also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our podcast at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and all the places where unscripted shenanigans like ours are recorded, published, and can be listened to through your ear holes. So, for Let's Weekend, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Lebo Danolfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi, good night, folks.